Okay, we're going to start here from the Mishnah on the bottom of Lamed Aleph Amud Bet. The Mishnayot are continuing to discuss Batei Arei Chuma, a person who is selling a house within a walled city. And over here, we know that he has 1 year within which that he can redeem the house. What happens? It comes to the end of the year, and he wants to redeem the house, but the buyer of the house disappears. So that way, he doesn't have the ability to buy the house back, and the buyer does this because once the year passes, he gets to keep it forever. So he has an advantage in doing such a thing. So that's what the Mishnah discusses. Rishuna, haya nitman, yom 12 chodesh. On the last day of the 12th month, the buyer used to disappear or hide. Today, shei chalut lo. So in order that it would be a permanent sale to him, and it will no longer be redeemed. Hitken hilel. Hilel was therefore mitaken, shei chulesh ma'utav lishka. He used to throw his money into the treasury, into the Beit Din. He'll break the door down and goes back in. Meaning that he was mitakein, that we do not need the presence of the buyer in order to have the house be redeemed. Whenever the buyer decides to show up again, he can come take his money. It's waiting there for him. Hillel was mitakein, that we don't have this issue of people all of a sudden disappearing on the last day of the year. So in order to avoid that problem, he said they can buy it back without you being present. Now this is similar to Hillel also has other takanot, including the Pruzbo, which are takanot where for the benefit of commercial trade, for the benefit of people, he is mitakein certain things. This is one of them, that on the last day of the 12th month, that one can redeem the house without the presence of the buyer. So Amarovo, mitakanato shel Hillel, become the takanav Hillel, hareze gitech amanat shetitni li 200 zuz. This is your get, but the condition of the get is that you must pay me 200 zuz. So in order for the get to be good, you need to fulfill the condition. The woman has to pay 200 zuz. Benatna lo midato, if she gives it to him willingly, would mean that he willingly accepts it, then migureshet. Bal kocho, if she gives it to him and he is unwilling to accept it, eina migureshet. So from Hillel, we would have this conclusion. Hillel basically says that was without the takana of Hillel, we would have assumed that giving something against someone's will is not called giving. Netina requires both a giving and an acceptance, a receipt by the other party willingly. That's why Hillel had to go ahead and be metakein this takana of batei arei chuma, because otherwise, if someone was to give the money against the will of the buyer, it would not have worked. So you had to have the takana in order to allow it to work. So that's what the Gemara says here. The whole takana of Hillel revolves around the fact that giving against the will of the recipient works. That means normally or generally. That means in general, when you give something against the will of the recipient, it is not considered a giving. Matkilar Papa, how do you know that that's the conclusion from Hillel's Takana? Vitema Rav Simi Barashi, Vidoma Kid Strichale Lehila Litkune. Maybe the Takana of Hillel came about Shalo Bifanav, because the buyer was not present. The recipient was not present. Al Bifanav, Bemidato, Bemiko, Valkorcho, Avya Netina. So I'm not clear that we can make the deal that you want out of the position of Hillel. Hillel's position involves two issues. One issue is that the recipient is getting it against his will. But number two is the recipient isn't present. He's not here. So maybe in that instance where you have two negatives, you don't have the recipient here and it's going to be against his will. Over there, it's not called a netina. And that's why Hillel had to be a mitakein. But if the recipient was present, we could force him to take it even against his will. Igadam, right? There's another way to read this, or as another way to present this, Amarava, mitakanato shel Hillel, harei ze giteich, amanat shetitni li 200 zuz, venatna lo, ben midato, ben bel korcho, havi netina. So Rava makes the statement, or the opening statement, like the conclusion of the previous way that we read this Gemara. The previous way the Gemara is that the whole takana of Hillel revolves around bal korcho, shelo bifanav. So Rava says, well, if that's where the takanat Hillel is, then means that in a case of the get, where you have to give the money, if you give it and the recipient is present, the husband is present, then if you give it to him, whether he wants it or doesn't want it, it's going to work. Because he'll only have to make the takana where the recipient is not present. So that's the conclusion you would draw from the takana tilal. And Hillel's takana was only in a case, shelo bifanav, when he's not present. Abo bifanav, if he is present, ben midato, ben bekocho, bal kocho, abinitina. If the recipient is present, doesn't matter if he wants it or he doesn't want it, it works. So matkala rapapa, vitema rav simi barashi. That's why they changed the gear so above to rav simi barashi and ravashi. Vidilma, ben bifanav, ben shalo bifanav, midato in bal kocho lo. Maybe it's irrelevant whether the recipient is present or not. Only thing that matters is whether he's willingly accepting it or it's against his will. The Hillel, my Yitzchak lay talking. Hillel, just that was the circumstance. It's not because the recipient wasn't present that he had to make the takana. That's just the circumstance. They used to disappear. And because they disappeared, then they had to deal with this issue when he disappears. But had he been present, the same issue would have been there, which is that you're forcing him to take the money against his will. Can you force somebody to take something against their will? So Rabba's statement is no, is yes, you could force somebody to take something. That was what Rabba's conclusion was, that you could force somebody to take something against their will. So Sefot raises a question right away. What do you mean? How can you force somebody to take something if they don't want it? Where do we ever find such a concept? The Shas is Malay, that you can only be Zochan Adam Shalom B'fanav, you're going to be Zochan on their behalf, but if they don't want it, it doesn't work.
That's what the Torah said. What's the Torah said? So you can come and redeem it.
Oh, very good.
What's the whole issue here?
Okay, so that's very good. So Tosafot breaks it down to three categories. The first category is what he calls reshut. Something that there's no obligation whatsoever to give something to someone, and there's no reason to give it to them. You want to give them a gift, you want to give something to them. Over there, everybody agrees, including Rava, you cannot give it, bal korcho. There's just no way. It's not, there's no reason that you could force someone to take something against their will. And here there's no connection between the two parties beforehand that would make you do it. Number two category is on the opposite end of the spectrum. Something that is a chov or pikadon. There you can give it back to the person against their will. Because over there, there's an existing relationship. The Torah demands that you give back the item to this person. So over there, you can give it back even against their will. There's nothing to stop you from giving it back because you have an obligation to give it. And the fact that they don't want to accept it, that's their issue, not your issue. You can give it even without their acquiescence, without their acceptance. The third category, which is obviously the category that we're dealing with here, is something that sits between those two. Something that's not an absolute reshut, but also is not an absolute chuvah. So Tosu says, Vim tomar v'chit strikle la vira yalze, denetina bal korcho la v'netina. Where do you have to bring a proof that denetina bal korcho is not a netina? If it's matanat reshut, where there is no necessity, and there pshita de lo avi bal kocho, rapapa nami lo pol legal ze ele b'matana sheish bat tzorech pligi. They argue in a case of a matana where there is a tzorech. Kmo hacha, damar hari ze gitech amanat shetin leli matayim zuz. She tzricha kedei lekayim tnai a get. She needs it to go through in order for the get to be effective. Ukugon Kabbalah de Matnitan, or our Mishnah in a case here where he wants to redeem the house. Over there, there's a need, there's a necessity for the one who is giving to do it. On the other hand, for the recipient, it's not necessary, he doesn't have to have it. So over there, that's the question of a Hechadika Chuvala Notain, Kagon Chovu Pikadon, Bahavada Avinitina Bal Kurcho. So Tosafot creates these three categories. Rishut, doesn't work at all. Chuva, where it works no matter what. And then we have these in-between positions, like our case of the Beit Chuma, like our case of the Get, where it's not an obligation to redeem it, it's an option, it's optional to redeem it, but, right, there's a right, you have a right to do such a thing. In that case, how far does that right go? Does that right make it like the Chuva? Or is it still, because it's optional within the world of Rishut? And that'll be the Machloket over here between Rava and Papa about your ability to give it Baal Korcho. And then Tosafot asks, if the recipient could refuse to accept it, then why did he run away? I mean, that Vim Tomar, even if he stayed in the city, and could just say, I don't want it, doesn't work, how come he had to run away? So Tosafot over here says that the person would have been bosh. He would have been embarrassed not to take it. If he was face to face and not to take the money, that he would be a little bit embarrassed. So what does he do? He takes off. That way he doesn't have to have that sense of unease about the person trying to give him the money. He's just not there. That's number one. Number two deals with an issue, which we'll also get back to in tomorrow's, I'll focus in on more in tomorrow's daf. This is a machlok between Rashi and Tosafot, the Rabbeinu Tam, in many places. And that is whether there was Yovel during Bayit Sheni. Over here, we're talking about Hillel. Hillel lived during the time of Bayit Sheni. And over here, he's talking about a tekana for Batei Arei Chuma. Batei Arei Chuma, as we're going to see later on in the Gemara, only functional when there is a Yovel. You need a Yovel for there to be a din of Batei Arei Chuma. So the implications from this, and that's what Tosfot concludes, is that there was a Yovel during Bayit Sheni. And there was a full-fledged Yovel. I mean, we're talking on a Doraita level, there was Yovel during Bayit Sheni. Rashi claims there was no Yovel during Bayit Sheni. And we're going to see later in today's Gemara that they did count Yovlot during Bayit Sheni. Rashi says it's all Durabana. That was just Manu Yovlot, Limnot Shmitim. They just needed the Yovel to make sure that the Shemitah year was in the right year. But other than that, Yovel had no significance in terms of Halacha. Rashi believes that the Yovel was all Derabanan, and over here, this was all Derabanan, so everything in to do with Yovel and Bayit Sheni is Derabanan. Tosafot in every place says that Yovel and Bayit Sheni was Deoraita, that they had a full-fledged Yovel during Bayit Sheni. Now, one of the questions that comes up is the Gemara in Gittin, so again, we'll do this more tomorrow in depth, is that the Gemara in Gittin in Lamed Vav, about Prusbol. Prusbol, over there, it says that Hillel was Metake in Prusbol because of Shmitat Ksafim. Rashi over there says that when the Yovel is Deoraita, Shmitat Ksafim is Deoraita. When the Yovel is Derabonon, then Shmitat Ksafim is only Derabonon. Because the Gemara answers, how could Hillel be Okir Davar B'Shemina Torah? Where it says, no problem, it's Shvit B'Zman Hazeh. Talking about Shvit B'Zman Hazeh. What do you mean Shvit B'Zman Hazeh? Hillel lives when the Beit HaMikdash is still around. So Rashi says it's Yovel. That's the other answer. That's Rava's answer. That's the other answer that the Gemara gives in Gittin. But there are two answers. One answer is Shmiti Derabon, and the other one is Efker Beit Din Efker. According to the one who says Efker Beit Din Efker, it's not a question. According to the one who says that it's Shmiti Derabon, and Bizman Hazeh, Hillel lives during Bayit Sheni. How could it be that Shmita was only Derabon? So Rashi says, no problem. No Yovel, no Shmita Deoraita. No problem whatsoever. Tosafot runs into a problem. He says, what do you mean? He says Yovel is Deoraita. So then Shmita should have been Deoraita. So Tosafot has to explain that Gemara in Gittin, this is the difficult Gemara for Tosafot, and say that Hillel was not metakin for Dorot. He's metakin for future Dorot. He saw that the Beit HaMikdash is going to be destroyed, and therefore he's metakin for future Dorot, when Shemitah would only be Derabanan, that it would work. It's a little difficult, because the Gemara there asks the question outright. Did Hillel be metakin for Dorot, or the future Dorot? So that, it's a difficult explanation. That's why Tosafot explains it, because of our Gemaras here. Our Gemaras would seem to indicate, and there are other Gemaras that seem to indicate that Yovel was Deoraita during Bayit Sheni. Again, Rashi in all these places says that Yovel was Derabanan and there was no Yovel Deoraita during Bayit Sheni. We'll get back to it again. It's the end of the sugya today, but in tomorrow's daf, I just want to highlight it here. There's a large Tosafot that makes the point over here exactly about that, about this issue of whether there was Yovel during Bayit Sheni. Right, next Mishnah. Kosho lifnim min echuma areu kebatei arei chuma. Anything inside the wall has a din of batei arei chuma. Chutz min esadot, except for fields. Rabbi Meir Omer, af esadot, even the fields. Bayit habanui b'choma, a house that's in the wall, I mean, that was very common, that the walls were usually two walls. There was an outer wall and an inner wall with filler in between. And then people used to build their houses within those walls. The example of that, which the Gemara will bring as a proof later on, is in Sefer Yoshua. B'choma yoshavet by Rachav HaZonah. And the two meraglim go to visit Rachav. They go to her house. Her house is built into the wall. That's how she's able to allow them to escape. Puts a rope out her window, out to the outside of the city. Bayit abanu b'chumah, Rav Yehuda Omer, eino kebatei arei chumah, does not have a din of a bayit arei chumah. Shimon Omer, kotel achiton hu chumato. The outer wall of the city is the wall, and therefore it is included within the category of batei arei chumah. Tarabanan, bayit. The pasuk says that we're speaking about a bayit, so ein li ela bayit. I would only know from that that we're speaking about a house, because it says when you sell the house, it says, v'im lo yigael ha'imot lo shanat v'imal v'kam ha'bayit asher ba'ir. So we're talking about a bayit. How do I know that it's more extensive than that? Minayin rabot batei badim. How do I know it includes all the presses? Batei marchetzaot, bathhouses, migdalot, towers, shovachim, dovecoats, borot, cisterns, v'shichim are built-out cisterns, bricked-up cisterns, umearot and caves. Tamalomar asher ba'ir. So asher ba'ir, it says, come a bayit, asher ba'ir. So asher ba'ir means anything that is a structure within the city. So then I would have thought, okay, anything in the city, that would even include, yachol ha'shani merabeh afsadot. Anything in the city would include even fields. Tamalomar bayit. Tibir Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, bayit is a limiting force, asher ba'ir is an inclusionary force. So one has to, bayit has a limit, and asher ba'ir is inclusive. So what's the conclusion? Anything that is a structure within the city will be classified as a Beit Arechoma. Sadot are obviously not a built structure, even though they're within the city. Therefore, they're not under this din. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir Omer, Beit, in Leila Beit, neither are both Batei Badim or Batei Merchatzot, Umigdalot, Vishovachim, Uborot, Shichim, Vimarot, Vafilu Sadot, Tomalomar, Asher Bayir. In the city, anything in the city counts, even Sadot. Velakti Beit, what does he do with the word Beit, then? Why say Beit? Samav Chis, Samav Katina, Cholasit, Umitzula, Ika Benayu. That the difference between them is the opinion of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda is about this cholatzit umitzula. It's machloket here, rishonim, about what the perush is. Rashi says a cholatzit is a quarry, umitzula is a place where they take out sand from. On the other hand, the oruch says that a cholatzit is a karka shafro chol shimiltzin mimenu zechuchit. It's an area that has sand that is used for glass making. And mitzula is karkeit anar, shemotzim mimenu kesef zav. It's a mine shaft at the base of the river that you take out gold and silver from it. The Rashbam over here is quoted by Tosafot, gives the same explanation of the cholasit as the oruch, but he just says that a mitzula is a fish pond. It's a deep area where they captured fish. So all of these are structures of some sort, but not fields. As Rashi points out, lo re'uim lizria, they're not made for planting, and therefore they are ra'ui lebinyan. That's one way to look at it. Since they're not ra'ui for planting, therefore they are ra'ui lebinyan, and they'll be categorized under the issue of bayit, at least according to Rabbi Meir. Or you could say that they have some structure to them. They have something built on them, they have a shaft, they have something there that is they've dug out. They did something to the area that means that they built it, quote unquote. And therefore it's included under the word bayit. And that's a machlok between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir agrees a full-fledged sadeh is not included. But what does he want to include? He wants to include these items where it's not ro'ui lizriah, and maybe it has some sort of structure to it. And that's what the Gemara brings, that we have Atanya b'nichuta, cholasit umitzula, Rabbi Meir omer ki batim, they have a din like batim, Rabbi Yehuda omer ki sadot, they have a din like a sadeh. Alright, Bayit Banui Bechuma, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Eino Kibatei Arechuma, Amar Rav Yochanan, Ushnei HaMikra Echad Darshu. They both were Doresh, the same Pasuk, by Rechav Zona, says, by Rechav Zona, Batoridem Bechevel, Ba'ada Chalon, Ki Beita Bakir Achuma. So, because her house was within the wall of the city, and therefore she was able to put out a rope that they could climb down, or climb her down, to get out of the city. Ubechuma Hi Yoshavet, she's sitting in the wall. So now, Rabbi Meir Savar, Kipashtei Dekra, like Pashup Shad of the Pasuk. She lives in the Chuma, means she lives within the city. She's in the wall of the city. Rabbi Yehuda Savar, Bechuma Yoshavet Velo Beir Chuma. Because the Torah, the Navi over there says Chuma, she lives in the wall. She lives in the wall, but she doesn't live in the walled city. And the difference is between living in the wall and living in a walled city. And that's why Rabbi Yehuda says that that wall does not help you in terms of your house. You need to be within the inner wall of the city in order to be classified to be within a Ir Chuma. Our next Mishnah, here comes a din about what is considered an Ir Choma. What is considered a walled city? Ir Shigagotea Chomata, a city within which the proximity of the houses creates a Choma, V'she'enu Mikufet Choma Mimot Shubenun, or a walled city that did not exist at the time of Yeshu Benun, Eno Kebatei Arei Choma. Neither of these are the classification of Batei Arei Choma. First of all, here's the qualification. So have a minimum of 3 courtyards, with each courtyard containing 2 houses. That's a minimum of a city. It has to have a wall around it from the time Yeshu Benun. Here's a list of walled cities within Eretz Yisrael. And here they are the examples of it within Eretz Yisrael. Katra Yishana Shel Tzipori. Near this little area called Katra that was near Tzipori. V'chakra Shel Gush Chalav. The Yudpat, Ayishana, the ancient Yudpat, the Gamlo, that's one you should recognize, the Gedud, the Chadid, the Ono, the Yerushalayim, the Chen Kayotzibim, and similar ones to them. So these are all examples of cities that had a wall from the time of Yoshua Binun, and they had sufficient residences in them, which is the minimum of 3 courtyards and 2 houses in order to be classified as Batei Arei Choma. So now the Gemara Darshan's at front, just what's the drushot about these dinim, about when the chuma was there, that the houses can't be the chuma. Tanu banan, chuma, velo shur iger. So when it comes to the chuma, the pasuk tells us that you have to have a chuma saviv. So that wall means a wall, velo shur iger. And not a wall made out of roofs. Shur, alei shur, alei ayin, by the bracha of Yosef, shur is a wall. So the shur can't come from the iger, from the gag, from the roof. Saviv, it says chuma saviv. Prat the teveria, sheyama chumata. That comes to exclude teveria. You need a chuma saviv all the way around. All the way around means that if one of your sides, like in teveria, that's the suffix in the Gemara and Megillah, is teveria a makom shemukefet chuma or lo mukefet chuma, because does the yam count as a chuma or not? Now, here from the Gemara, it sounds like yes, it would count as a chuma. Except that the Torah makes a demand of chuma saviv. The additional Lashon of Saviv says that over here you need a full-fledged wall all the way around. Otherwise it would have been considered a wall. Tveria is out. By Megillah they have a Safek, and therefore they lain on both days. Yudelet and Tedvav. Rabbi Elazar Bar Yossi Omer, Asher lo chuma, afapi shein lo achshav, vayalo kodem lechein. Even though it does not have a chuma today, if it had a chuma at the time of Yeshua ben Nun, that is sufficient. What is the limud? Rashi says, look at the word lo. Lo is spelt in the Torah, lamed vav aleph. So therefore he says, lo ktiv, mashva lo, reads both ways. Asher lo chuma, that had a wall, lamed vav. Asher lo chuma, but lamed aleph, it doesn't have a chuma today. That's the way Rashi reads it. Tosafot already jumps on it, and you should jump on it as well. There is no such word in the Torah of lamed vav aleph. It's a Korean ktiv in our Torah. And that's what Tosafot says. He says from Rashi, it sounds like his Torah had a lamed vav aleph written in them. That's what he says. Lamed vav aleph ktiv. And then Tosafot says, va'ari chumashim and duyakot. That is not true. That it's written, lamed aleph is the ktiv, and the kri is lamed vav. And that's asher lo chuma. Chuma, and you dash it in both ways. Asher lo chuma, that had a wall, but lo chuma, even though it does not have a wall today. Right now we move on to the issue of Kedusha Rishona and Kedusha Shnia. Ve'elein batei arei chuma. Tano, we have a braita. Gamlo b'galio. Gamlo is in the Galio. I don't know today if it's classified necessarily as Galio. Today it's classified as the Golan. But Gamlo b'galio. Ve'gedud be'ever yardein. Ve'chadid ve'ono v'Yerushalayim b'Yehuda. These are walled cities from the time of Yeshua ben Nun. Ma'ikamar. What's this braita teaching us? So now we have a machloka in the Bayin Rova about exactly what this braita is teaching us. Amar Abayi. Hachi gamar. Ad gamlo bigalio. Ad gedud beiver yardein. Vechadid ve'ono v'yishalayim b'yehuda. So all the cities that, this is the furthest out city in those areas that qualifies to have a wall around it. So if you have other cities that are more proximate to you or closer in, those cities also have walls in time of Yeshua ben Nun. This is the extent or the largest extent to which we would classify it as being within Eretz Yisrael, or having a wall around it. Rav Amar, Rav explains it differently. Gamla b'galio, lafuke gamla d'shara etzot. Gamla b'galio comes to teach you that gamla has a wall around it, but other gamlot, other places that are called gamla, they don't have a wall around them. Gedud b'ever yardein, lafuke gedud d'shara etzot. So gedud b'ever yardein is a wall, so you don't think gedud in other places has that. Inach, dolo ike kavatayu. The other areas that do not have a sister city or another city with the same name, lo yitzrich lei, therefore it doesn't need it. So the Braita brought these examples and not other examples to teach you that these cities that have a sister city, another twin city that has the same name as it, those cities that have the same name are not walled. I'm giving you the location of the city by this name that has the wall in it, not any other city with that name in it. Now the Gemara asks, "V'Yerushalayim mi michlat bo?" So both according to Rav and Abaye, wait a minute, Yerushalayim, how could it be that we're talking about Yerushalayim? Anyway, Yerushalayim mi michlat bo? Atanya, asarad dvarim nemru b'Yerushalayim. There are 10 things said about Yerushalayim. So Gemara in Baba Kama, ein abayit chalut ba. One of the things about Yerushalayim is that the house is never permanently sold in Yerushalayim. That's because lo nitchalka d'shvatim. It was never distributed to the shvatim, so there's no real personal ownership within Yerushalayim. So if that's the case, how could you have a batei arei chuma going to permanent sale in Yerushalayim? It's not telling you that in Yerushalayim the din is true. It's telling you it has to be like Yerushalayim. Demukevet chuma min Yeshua ben Nun. Yerushalayim has that status. It has a chuma around from the time of Yeshua ben Nun. V'lo k'Yerushalayim, not literally like Yerushalayim, d'il Yerushalayim, ein bayit chalut ba. V'ilocha bayit chalut ba'en. The other examples, the house does go permanently, because those are batei arechuma. On the other hand, miyamot Yeshua binun, that's the qualification, and Yerushalayim has that qualification. Rav Ashi amar, lav amar Rav Yosef, trei. Now this is a question over here, you could read it as trei kedesh havu, like kedesh naftali, or you can read it trei kadesh ayu, which is called kadesh barnea. Both of them are true. There were two places called kadesh, and there are two places called kedesh. So either kadesh or kedesh havu. So Akhanami trei Yerushalayim havu. There also were two Yerushalayims. Meaning that, just like with the other cases we're talking about, multiple cities with the same name, there are multiple cities with the name Yerushalayim. So the Yerushalayim we're speaking about here is not Yerushalayim that we know as the capital city, the religious center, but another Yerushalayim within Yehuda that was a walled city, Mimo, to Yeshua bin Nun. Alright, Tanya. Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yosei, Lama Manu Chachamim et Eilu. Why do the Chachamim enumerate these cities? Kishakalu b'nei Gola Matsu Eilu v'kidushum. The Bnei Gola came up, they were Mekadesh the cities. Aval Rishonot Batlu Mishim Batla Kedushat Haaretz. But the first cities, the original cities, do not have a Kedusha that extends. The first Kedusha of Yehoshua bin Nun was abrogated at the time of the Churban. There was no longer a Kedusha Rishonah. It was Mitpatel Kasavar. Kedusha Rishonah Kitcha da She'ata Lo Kitcha da Tidavo. He held that the first Kedusha did not last beyond the time of the Churban. And therefore when the Galut came back, when they came back from Bavel, they had to be Mekadesh the cities that they considered to be Batei Arei Chuma. So now what's interesting here is how are you Mekadesh a walled city? Rashi quotes the Gemara in Shavuot that says, the Mekadeshla b'shtei todot, ubishir, with two carbonate todot, the song, ubeitin, mehauchin, b'shtei todot, achreim, b'shtei todot, adir. As Tosva points out, the Gemara in Shavuot is talking about Yerushalayim. How are you Mekadesh Yerushalayim? How do you extend the city? How do you make it bigger? Rashi applies that to Batei Arei Chuma in general. Although Tosafot ends off and he says, I don't know how you're Mekadesh and Ir Chuma. I don't know what it means to be Mekadesh and Ir Chuma. We have no process in which to do it. And I don't know what it means that they came back V'kidushum and they were Mekadesh them. What does that mean that they came into Mekadesh and Ir Chuma? And now it has a nafkamina. Has a nafkamina in terms of Batei Arei Chuma. Has a nafkamina in terms of Mitzorayim. Mitzorayim have to be thrown out of a city that has a wall around it. So if it's Kedushat Ir Choma, there is a value, or there is something important about it being Kadosh with a Choma. The question is how to get it to be Kadosh with Choma, that we're unclear about. Now, Viraminhi, is that really true? Is that really the position Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, which is Kitcha the Shait of Lo Kitcha the Atid Ravo when it comes to Kedushat Rishonah? Ve'am Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, V'chi Elu Bilvad Ayu, Alo Kvar Ne'amar, doesn't say in Dvarim, Shishim Ir Kochelev Bel Argov, the area that they conquer of Sichon and Og, is plentiful, full of cities and walled cities. Kol Eile Arim Bitzurot. They're all walled cities. They're all fortified cities. Why did the Chachamim enumerate these cities? When the Be'olah came up, they were Mekadesh them. Kiddushum? Why do you have to be Mekadesh them? Amrina, Delo Tzorich LeKiddushinu. You said that they don't have to be Mekadesh them. Elo Benaum, they counted, they enumerated them. Lo Elo Bilvad, not just these cities. A kosh ve'alecha mesorah v'yadecha me'abutecha. Shemukev v'choma me'imot Yeshua b'nun. Anything you have mesorah about the fact that it has a wall around it from the time of Yeshua b'nun. Kol mitzvot alalu nuheget pa. All of the mitzvot apply there. Mipnei, kedusha rishona kitcha the shaita v'kitcha the tidavo. The only thing that's important is the first kedusha. Kedush kedusha daritz, which from the time of Yeshua b'nun. That's the kedusha that dictates over here. That's the one that matters. So here we have two memrot, two braitot from Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. One that concludes that Kedusha Rishona was not permanent, and a second braitot that concludes that Kedusha Rishona was permanent. So how are you going to reconcile? So Ibai Tema, Trey Tanai, Valdiva de Rabbi Shmuel. These are two Tanaim quoting Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. Ibai Tema, Chaminai, Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Yossi. And one of them is, one possibility is that one of the authors here is Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Yossi. That Amra, because we just had Rabbi Lozer Rabbi Yossi on the previous Amud, the Tanya Rabbi Lozer Rabbi Yossi Omer, Asher Lo Choma, Avabishen Lo Achshav, Ayelam Kodem Lechen. What's the reason that the Choma does not have to be extant today? Why is it classified as being an Ir Choma, even though the wall is not there? Because the point of determination was when Yeshua came into the Aretz, and he was Mekadesh the cities. That's the only thing that matters, if they were walled at that time. And therefore, its Kedusha Rishona was permanent, according to Rabbi Lozer Rabbi Yossi, and that's why he has that opinion. And that's what, he'll be the author of the position here. It wouldn't be Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yossi, but rather Rabbi Elazar, but Rabbi Yossi. And therefore, he'll have the opinion of that Kedusha Rishona was permanent, and Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yossi will have the opinion that it was not permanent. So now the Gemara wants to go back and understand. My time of the Mandamar, Kedusha Rishona, Kitcha the Shaita, below Kitcha the Tadilabo. What's the reason behind the Mandamar that says Kedusha Rishona was not permanent? It says, Dichtiv, because it says when they come back from the Gola in Nehemiah, it says, Ve'yasu kol ha-kahal, b'nei Gola shavim min ha-shevi, Sukkot, ve'yishvu b'sukkot, ki lo aso mimot Yeshua binun. That's something that they hadn't done from the time of Yeshua binun, Cain b'nei Israel. Vati simcha gdola ma'od. And it was an unbelievable celebration. Efshar ba David b'lo aso Sukkot, tachuba Ezra. What are you talking about? How could it be that they didn't have any Sukkot? They didn't celebrate Sukkot from the time of Yeshua ben Nun until Ezra. What happened to David? What happened to all those times in between? They didn't have Sukkot at all? El Mekish, Biatam Bimei Israel, Biatam Bimei Yeshua. It's a non sequitur. This has nothing to do with the previous part of the Pasuk. Pasuk says they came and did Sukkot and the Yeshua ben Sukkot. Then, the part of the Pasuk says, Kilo Asu, that they hadn't done this, Mimot. It's actually not Yeshua, it's Mimei Yeshua without a hay in it. It's a Yeshua ben Nun, that they didn't do it from the time Yeshua ben Nun. That has nothing to do with Sukkot. That has to do with the Kiddush Haaretz. Just like when they came in the time of Yeshua ben Nun, they went ahead and they were Mekadesh the Haaretz and Manush Mitim Yoblot, Vikichu Arei Choma, Api Atam Bimei Ezra. The same thing is true in the time of Ezra. Manush Mitim Yoblot, Vikichu Arei Choma. And they went ahead and they were Mekadesh the Arei Choma. Vomer. And it says the pasuk in Dvarim, "V'biyachah Hashem elkech al haaretz asher yashuv etecha v'irishta." What does it mean, "Yashuv etecha v'irishta"? Mekeish yirushatcha liyirushat abutecha. It's mekeish your yirusha to the yirusha of your forefathers. My yirushat abutecha, which was the time of Yeshua ben Nun bechidush kol dvarim alalu, was the reinstatement of all these things: shmitim, yovlot, arechuma. So too, when you come back, the second time, the time from Bavel with Ezra, you have to be Mechadesh, you have to restart all of these things. And therefore you see that Kedusha Rishona was only temporary, and you have to reinstate all these things in the time of Ezra when they come back. Vidach, the other one who says that Kedusha Rishona was permanent, what does he do with these psukim? Dibai Rachmei al Yetzer d'Avod Azarao Batlei, v'gin z'chuta alayu kisukah. How does he explain the pasuk in Nehemiah? That they did a holiday of Sukkot, something that had not been done since the time Yeshua ben Nun. He explains that Sukkot over here is not literally Sukkot, but the fact that Ezra at the time convened the Sanhedrin, it's Gemara in Sanhedrin, a Gemara in Yoma, to mivatel the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah. So he convened them, and they were able to take out the Yetzirah for Avodah Zarah, and that protected them like a Sukkah. Ezra had done something that was so great, it took care of them and protected them like a Sukkah. So then, behind Ukakakbi cry, Loi de Yoshua. Why does the Pasuk then mention that it wasn't from the time of Yoshua they hadn't done this? The Bechol Duchta Ktiv Yoshua. Everywhere else in Tanakh, it calls him Yehoshua. Vachativ Yeshua. And over here, it calls him Yeshua. Bishlama Moshe lo boirach me. Moshe wasn't the one to lavi zchuta deretz Yisrael. Moshe was the one who could not be mevatel the Avodah Zarah, because he didn't have the zchut of Eretz Yisrael. Hello, Yehoshua, Davalei Zchuto Deretz Yisrael. He did take Am Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael. He had the Zchuto Deretz Yisrael. He should have been Mevatel, the Avodah Zarah. My lo boy, Bayi Rachmei. Why was he not Mevatel, the Yetzahara? Zvakti. What about the second pasuk he brought? Sher Yeshua Batecha Rishta. Hachikamar, this is the way to read it. Came into Yeshua Batecha, Yerashtata. Just like because your forefathers inherited, I mean because they created a Kedusha Rishona, therefore you are all set now. When you show up, everything's in place because the Kedusha Rishona was permanent. And since the Kedusha Rishona was permanent, you don't have to do anything when you got there. Now with regards to Kedusha Rishona, over here there happens to be a major machloket Rishonim in the end about what the halacha is like. We have sugyo throughout Shas, we have sugya in Kulin, we have sugya in Zvachim, sugya in Megillah, and the sugya in Shavuot, multiple sugyot throughout Shas that deal with Kedusha Rishona and Kedusha Shnia. And from the Gemara, it's somewhat inconclusive, it's Machloket Tanaim, and inconclusive about what the halacha is. Is it Kedusha Rishona is Kedusha Latid Lavo, or is it not Latid Lavo? Is Kedusha Rishona permanent or temporary? In this area, we have a major Machloket Rishonim. Some Rishonim believe that it's Kedusha Rishona was permanent. Other Rishonim believe that it was Kedusha Shnia was required. And then there are many Rishonim who divide or separate between Yerushalayim and the rest of Eretz Yisrael. The Kedushat HaAretz and Kedushat Yerushalayim, they separate between them. And that the Rambam has an unusual shita about. The Rambam says that Kedusha Rishona for the Aretz was not permanent. Kedusha Rishona of Yerushalayim was permanent. And then the Kedusha Shnia of Ezra was permanent because of the way that it happened. Because it happened through Chazakah, not through conquest. The Rabbi right away jumps on him. And the Rabbi believes that the Kedusha Rishona was batel both for the Aretz and for Yerushalayim. And therefore, the Rebbe believes that one can go up to Makom HaMikdash today. Because Makom HaMikdash is not Kadosh anymore. The Kedusha was Nitpatel, it was only a temporary Kedusha. And therefore, there's no restriction of going on to Har HaBayit anymore, because the Kedusha dissolved, went away, it's gone. It's actually put explicitly in a Me'iri and Shavuot about this issue of being Olel Har HaBayit. According to the Rambam, you can't go on to Har HaBayit because the Kedusha permanent in Yerushalayim, and therefore the Kedusha, the Shekhinah, is always there in Yerushalayim. We do have a letter from the Rambam describing a letter to his friend in Akko that says that I remember when you, myself, my father, my brother, were metayel through Eretz Yisrael, and we went up to the Yerushalayim, to Makom HaMikdash, and we walked up there. So most people interpreted the Rambam using the Lashon HaYilus Lashon HaPasuk does not mean literally they went on to Har HaBayit, just that they went to the area of where Har HaBayit was. But some wanted to say from there that the Rambam himself went on to Har HaBayit. Though again, I would say more because he's quoting Psukim there in the letter, that it doesn't seem like he literally went on to Har HaBayit. The Rav Soloveitchik in Alachuva and other places quotes a very famous explanation for the Rambam Shita about what's the difference between Yerushalayim and the Aretz. So he says, Yerushalayim, which has the Shekhinah, is a permanent type of Kedusha. In the Beit Rishon, the land was conquered first, and then the Yerushalayim was put into place in Nitkadesh. Therefore, Kedushat Aretz HaRishonah, Nitbatel, goes away, because it was done through conquest. Yerushalayim, which has the Shekhinah, is permanent. In Beit Sheni, when Ezra comes up, Yerushalayim is the first place that is Kadosh, because it's Kadosh already, and then only after that, through Chazakah, do they settle the cities outside of Yerushalayim. Therefore, the Kedushat Shniah is Noveya, derived from Yerushalayim. And because of that, the Kedushat Aretz HaShniah, according to the Rambam, is Mideoraita, is permanent, and Mideoraita, not Kedushat Rishonah. And that's the Rav Soloveitchik's explanation of the Rambam's unusual Shita, about the difference between Yerushalayim and the Aretz. Again, it has major nafkamino to us today, whether there is Kedushat Aretz HaShniah is permanent. We are more makpid when it comes to Shvi'it. As you'll note, that people write that they have things within the borders of the second Aliyah, meaning the second Bia Shnia, in the time of Ezra. That's one area of Eretz Yisrael. There's Bia Rishonah in the time of Yeshua Binun. So the areas that are not within the Bia Shnia, but are within the areas of Bia Rishonah, those areas we are more makil with regards to Shvi'it. That's number one. And obviously it has implications for other things like Trumot and Ma'asrot. And then according to the Ravid, where there is no Kedusha, obviously everything that's practiced today is a Din Rabbanan, which is the Shita of the majority of the Rishonim, that today all of these items, Maisod and Trumot, are only Dinei Dirabbanan. And even the Rambam himself, who thinks that the Kedushat Aretz is Midoraita, still believes that the Trumot and Masrot may be only a Din Dirabbanan, and not a Din Deoraita, because of other factors, including Kol Yoshevei Aleha, other factors that impact in terms of creating the Din Deoraita of Shvi'it. So therefore, you could have a possibility where Kedushat Aretz is permanent, yet Shvi'it today is only a Din Dirabbanan. It's a major makhlokot Rishonim. Tosafot brings down many different permutations of Shitot, Rashi, the Rambam, the Raifu, the Meiri, and Bavardim, Asendat, the Mekorot, to deal with this issue of Kedusha Rishona. So now the Gemara wants to go back and backtrack about an issue, which is that we just said over here that they were Manu, Yovlot, Ushmitim. Imanu, Ushmitim, Yovlot. How can they be counting Shmitim, Yovlot? Hashtam, Eshi, Galu, Shivit, Uvein, Vishivit, Gad, Vichatzi, Shivit, Nishahir, Batlu, Yovlot. The time that Sancheriv puts the Aver or Yardin into Galut, already are then the Yovlot are out of practice because you need Kol Yoshevei Aleha. You need all of Klal Yisrael together in Eretz Yisrael in order for there to be a counting of the Yovlot. Gemara says Ezra Dichtiv Bei. Now you're going to talk about Ezra Kol Hakaal Kechad Arba Ribo Alpayim
Vishalosh
Meot Vishishim. All the people that he brought back were 42,000.
360.
Havamani, then he would have counted. Of course, that's just a small percentage of Klal Yisrael that Ezra comes back with. So how could he be counting Shmitim and Yovlot when already in the time of Bayit Rishon they stopped counting Shmitim and Yovlot because they had lost a part of Klal Yisrael? The Tanya, Shigalu Shevet Reuven, Shevet Gad, Shechatzi Shevet Menasheh, and Chenever put in the Evar Yardin into Galut, but Lu Yovlot, that the Yovlot went out of practice. Shneimar, Kratim Dor Baretz Lechol Yoshevah, to all its inhabitants. Mizman Shechol Yoshevah Leah, Lo Zman Shigalu Miksatan. It's only when all the inhabitants are there do we say that the Yovlot are practiced, but not when a portion of them are there, and that's what we're talking about over here. Yochol Ayu Aleah Vein Mu'aravim. You would think that, okay, all its inhabitants are here, but they're not divided up by Shvatim. Shevet Binyamin b'Yudah, Shevet Yudah b'Binyamin. Here Yovel Noheg, you would think, still think that Yovel works. Tamal Omar, b'chol Yoshveah. B'zman sheYoshveah ketikunan, v'lo b'zman she'ein mi'uravim. Only in a case where each Shevet is in its proper location, does it work? It's Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak, Manu Yovlot, b'kadesh Shmitim. They only counted the Yovlot. You're right, the Yovlot were not being practiced because there wasn't Kol Yoshveah Leah. But they were counting the Yovlot in order to be Mikadesh the Shmitim. In order to have it that the Shmitim would be in place. Because if the Shmitim are every 7 years, and then you have the Yovel, if you didn't count the Yovel, your Shemitah years would be off after you passed the Yovel. Because you would start counting the new Shemitah year instead of skipping a year for the Yovel. So it was a place marker. They counted the Yovel as a place marker. That works well according to the Rabbanon who say that Yovel is not counted towards the Shemitah cycle. Ela Rabbi Yehuda damar shnat chamishim ola lekan ulekan. According to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that the Yovel year is also the first year of the next cycle, then he doesn't, you don't need a placeholder of Yovlot. Shmitim automatically cycle every 7 years. There's always a cycle of 7 years. There's no interruption of that cycling of 7 years. So if that's the case, Lomali, what do you need to count Yovlot for? Mishmitim Sagya would be enough with Shmitim. Havadai lav ki Rabbi Yehuda. That is definitely a lot like Rabbi Yehuda. This Braita is definitely not authored by Rabbi Yehuda, because over there you would not have to count Yovlot on behalf of the Shmitim.
So what's the purpose of counting the Yovlot?
Because the Yovlot can't be Doraita, because you need the Chol Yoshveah. They already stopped counting the Yovlot at the end of Bayit Rishon, because part of Klal Yisrael went into Galut. They had the Ivar Yardin, and then eventually the Aseret HaShvatim, the whole Malchut Yisrael goes into Galut. So they stopped counting the Yovlot. Here, Ezra comes back, the small percentage of Klal Yisrael. How could he be counting the Yovlot? What was he counting the Yovlot for? Gemara's answer is, he manu Yovlot to take care of the Shmitim. That's why he was mona the Yovlot. Because if he didn't count Yovel, you'd have a cycle of 49 years, 7 of 7, and then what would you do? If there's no Yovel, you'd start a new Shmita cycle again. That would mean you'd be off by a year. The Yovel is like a placeholder to tell you in the 50th year, wait, only start counting the new 49-year Shmita cycle a year after. Don't do it in succession. Don't count 49, 49, 49. Irrelevant in terms of halachic implications. But they're not irrelevant in terms of their placeholder to set up the Shvi'it in the right place, according to the Rabbanan. So again, I'm going to finish off. We'll finish this Gemara off tomorrow, and then come back and speak about the Tosfot. You can see here, there's a Tosfot again. Manu Yovlot, the Kadesh Shmitim. That again here, this Machlokes between Rashi and Tosafot and Rabbeinu Tam, with regards to what the status of Yovel, again in Bayit Sheni, and whether they were Noheg Yovel in Bayit Sheni at all. Was there ever a din of Yovel? And this comes through the Chiddush of the Rabbeinu Tam. Again, we'll speak a little bit more about it tomorrow. The Chiddush of the Rabbeinu Tam, which is that Kol Yoshveh Aleha does not require the entire Shevet be there. You just need a representative of each Shevet to be there. As long as you have one person, one individual from each Shevet to be there, that classifies as Kol Yoshveh Aleha. Whereas Rashi believes, and what the Pashtut seems to be, is that Kol Yoshveh Aleha means literally that you need the majority of Klal Yisrael to be here in Eretz Yisrael.